Thank you very much. Thank you, Aldo, for the invitation, and thanks to PI. Very happy to be here to present this joint work with my supervisor, Alberto Cattaneo. So today I would like to talk about this BV-BFV approach to general relativity, and in particular, I will explain a little bit what is the general framework for Lagrangian field theories on manifolds with boundary in view of axiomatization of field theory. And then I will move on to the actual formalism that's been developed by, well, first Batalin and Wilkowiski and Fradkin, and then joined together by Cattaneo, Mnev, and Reshetykin, that also proposed a prescription for quantization of these theories that satisfy some particular axioms. And lastly, I will explain what happens when you test this formalism on general relativity in two formulations, the Anson-Hilbert action and the Palatini-Holst action. And then if I have time, I will outlook a bit the consequences and how we can move on. So the idea is that when we have a Lagrangian field theory, which is regular, and we allow boundaries, what happens is that we have a space-time manifold M, and we associate to it a space of classical fields and an action functional on this space of fields. If the boundary is trivial, what we know is that, well, if it's not non-trivial, we know that the variation of the action splits in a bulk term and a boundary term. The bulk term is just the zero locus of this bulk term will be the Euler-Lagrange equations, while the boundary term can be interpreted as a one form on a particular space, which we will call the space of pre-boundary fields, which is just a space of restrictions of fields and their jets, the normal jets, to the boundary. This one form is also known as the Noether form, and it's like a really, really classical object. So whenever the theory is regular, so we have no symmetries, this space of pre-boundary fields, so restrictions of fields and jets, with the differential of this one form, is a symplectic manifold. A simple example, just to fix the ideas, is if we take the scalar field and the space of fields associated to it is just functions on a manifold, then the variation of this action will give us a term containing the equations of motion plus an extra term. This extra term can be interpreted as a one form, this alpha tilde, on a particular space, which is, as I said, the space of pre-boundary fields. And notice that, so here I changed the notation to denote that I'm considering a map. I'm considering the map that takes the field phi to its restriction, phi on the boundary, and the jet, the derivative dn of phi, to another independent field, j of phi. So if I take the differential of this one form, I will have dj d phi, and this is a symplectic form. This theory is regular, so everything is complies to what I said before. Now the interesting thing is when we move from regular theories to gauge theories, and of course we have the usual problems of gauge fixing and, well, the critical locus of the action, so the solutions to the equations of motion, that is degenerate. And so the standard approach to treat these problems is the BRST formalism that in particular realized that gauge fixing can be seen as an operation in some cohomology. Let me be a bit sketchy at this point. And later on, Batalin and Wilkowiecki came up with a more general framework to treat more general symmetry distributions, in particular those that do not close everywhere in the space of fields. And they interpreted gauge fixing as integration over Lagrangian submanifolds. I will make this point a little bit more clear in a second. But the interesting point is that even if we have a theory that is BRST-like, let's say, so it comes from the action of a Lie group, the fact that we are treating it with the BV formalism gives us more information, because it turns out to be compatible in some sense that I will explain with the boundary. And if that happens, we talk about BV-BFV formalism. So let's review a little bit of the BV formalism. So when we look at the classical gauge theory, as usual, we assign to M space of classical fields, an action functional. And now we have the symmetry distribution, which is a distribution on the space of fields that represents the symmetry in this sense, that whenever I have a field in this, whenever I have a vector field acting on my fields, I want it to annihilate the action. The particular case of DM being a Lie algebra action means that this distribution is everywhere involutive. I will only stick to this case for the rest of the talk. And so the, let's say the mathematical aspect comes in when understanding what is the setting which is better suitable to treat this framework. So the setting is graded symplectic geometry, and we will introduce like ghost fields and antifields in the following way. So now for a second, we will assume that we have no boundary. So the boundary is trivial for the moment. So what we do is, remember we have this DM, the distribution of symmetries, and we declare them to have degree one. So we just put an additional artificial grading on our manifold. And then we consider this complicated space, which in the end is simple, but it looks complicated. But so DM is the distribution of symmetry. So it's a distribution on the space of fields. And a vector field in here will annihilate the action. So I consider the cotangent space shifted by minus one of this object whose fiber coordinates I declare to have degree one. So what I'm doing, just to be more precise, more clear, if I have, say, connections and I have the ghosts of connections, I declare them to have degree one. And then I add two fields that are the cotangent duals. And they will have degree minus one and minus two, zero. Right, so this will be inside this FM. So these are in the cotangent fiber, this is in the base, and in the base I have this shift of degree. Now, the additional piece of data we need to complete the structure, the BV structure, is we want to encode all the symmetries, so these DM, inside a vector field QM on the space of fields, which is this one, such that it has this property, which is the cohomological property. Then the simple theorem is that if the theory is BRST-like, so if this distribution is everywhere involutive, then you can construct another function, which we will call BV extended action, by starting from the classical action and extending by this term. And then you can prove that if you consider this action, it will satisfy this equation, which is called classical master equation, that will have an important role in the following. Right, so the question then is, if this is the classical BV formalism without boundary, what happens if I do have a boundary? If I have a boundary, I have a failure of this master equation. So this equation will no longer be true when the boundary is there, but I can control it, I can control this failure exactly by the same one form I defined before. So the Noether form for a more general action, which is the BV extended action. And this one form will be again a one form on the space of pre-boundary fields, this F tilde. And I will have a map, this map will be extremely important for what follows, that connects the fields in the bulk with the fields on the boundary in some way. What happens with respect to the difference with respect to the classical regular case is that if you consider its differential, this omega tilde, this will be in general degenerate because I have symmetries. Okay, so the natural question is it presymplectic, which means somehow, is it constant rank? Can I describe the space of fields in a much better way by reducing by the kernel of this form here? Well, if you assume that this is the case, so if the kernel of this omega tilde is a subbundle, which is a complicated way to say that the kernel of omega does not depend on the point, does not change in size from point to point, then we can perform symplectic reduction. And the theorem, which is in the end the definition of the BV-BFV formalism, is that if I have such a data, FM, SM, QM, and omega M, yes, so FM is the space of fields in the bulk, which is the shifted cotangent bundle to the classical data. This is the BV extended action. This is the vector field encoding the symmetries, which squares to zero. Somehow, yes, it's extended by psi dagger q psi, phi dagger q psi, q phi. So let me write it down here. So the extended action is the classical action plus the pairing of phi dagger q phi. Yeah, for BRC-like symmetries. I'm only considering BRC-like symmetries for the moment.
It's more you're saying it's rank one when you, because the BRC symmetries could also generate higher terms and ghosts like this.
Yes,
if you
but
do the process.
If the symmetry closes off shell, so everywhere, then this is enough. And this is, it's a checking you can do. Enough for what? Enough for to satisfy the classical master equation. Okay, so this Q is sometimes called the BRST operator in the bulk. And it generates symmetries. And omega is just a canonical symplectic form on the cotangent bundle. Then the data we get for free whenever we assume that kernel of omega is a subbundle, is a surjective submersion. Okay, it's a fancy name, but it just means, well, a nice map from the space of bulk fields to the space of boundary fields, true boundary fields, which is the symplectic reduction of this space. So it's a symplectic manifold. A degree one field, vector field Q delta, which is just a projection of this Q here to the space of boundary fields, which is still cohomological. No, in this case, it's just a space of fields. All connections.
That's strange.
Why?
So you cannot think of the boundary field as the initial data.
You can, yes, okay. In some sense, you can. It's so the initial data will be a quasi-isotropic submanifold inside here. You will have the constraint. They cannot. Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that if you want to do what you're saying, so the canonical analysis, you will recover it at the end of the story, and it will define a coisotropic submanifold first class constraint, if you want, inside here.
So you have a notion of continuity between boundary fields and, I mean, how are the boundary fields? Because you could take boundary fields independently of the bulk field.
No, they come from restrictions. They come from restrictions of fields.
So the fields have to be C infinity. Is there some kind of condition of regularity that somehow becomes general?
No, you start from the restrictions of fields on the boundary. And then you essentially remove extra degrees of freedom that you don't need. And this procedure is what usually it's called the solution of the second constraints, the second class constraints. So what you get in the end is a symplectic manifold. Inside of this symplectic manifold, you will have the set of solutions to the Euler-Lagrange equation and the coisotropic submanifold given to you by the constraints.
So usually, if I give you P and Q, it is a set of initial data. So it's like.
Well, but P and Q are a regular theory. If you have P.
Yeah, so for, you know, I have to, in order to get a symplectic structure, I have to say that P and Q label initial data for the just solution window. Otherwise, P and Q, there are many P and Q's which are.
I'm not saying that all fields here can be extended to a solution in the bulk. So the set of fields on the boundary that can be extended to a solution in the bulk is a submanifold in here.
There's also many fields in the bulk which have the same boundary data.
Yes. Yes, for sure. No, but in fact this is a surjective submersion. So two more fields here, I associate the same field here.
But usually what you want is that it's more than you want some kind of injection of that. You want to be able to label bulk solutions by boundary data. This is what you have.
No, what we are doing here is slightly different, but there is a way you can recover the solutions to the equations of motion here by looking at what happens here. But this is, for the moment, it's just describing what I have. And this space is by construction symplectic. Then you can interpret what it means. But what it means is that the coisotropic submanifold you will describe in a way that I will explain in a second is the reduced phase space.
But what if you have symmetries that are valid on the on-shell, which is a common thing?
Well, in that case, you're not in the BRST-like setting, but you can extend. So you can still, so you will have something more here. You can extend this. Also, you can always do it. And then you will get anyway the same structure. So if you have BF theory, for instance, you can do it. If you have Poisson sigma model, you can do it. Right. So what you get here, you get this degree one vector field Q boundary, which is a projection of the bulk object there, and the symplectic form, because this is symplectic, which is just a reduction of the pre-boundary Noether form. And then the most important thing is that you get a degree one functional S delta, which is the Hamiltonian function of the vector field Q, which means that that satisfies the classical master equation on the boundary. And as I will show in a while, this data here contains, this action here contains all the relevant information of the constraint analysis and the residual gauge symmetry.
Yeah. Omega 2, there's a sub-bundle of...
Yeah. Right, sorry. So what we get on the boundary is what people usually call a BFV structure, therefore the name BVBFV. And what this BFV structure does is just, okay, these are fancy names, but this is just... So I'm resolving the submanifold of constraints in the phase space up to gauge symmetry. And this is something you can do even without all the rest. So if you know the constraints, because you did like Dirac analysis, for instance, and if you know the symmetries, then you can perform this BFV resolution, which is something that is known, and you can come up with something that looks like this. The relevant, yeah.
What do you mean by resolution?
Resolution, I mean, so a resolution is a replacement of, instead of considering a quotient, for instance, of a space with respect to gauge symmetries, I consider a complex. And in that sense, I'm resolving. Does it work? Yeah. So as I said, this data here you could get without knowing anything of the bulk. You just know the constraints, and then you construct it. But the important thing is that we have the compatibility. We have the compatibility between the bulk and the boundary, which is given by this set of equations, which are equivalent. And so remember, we said that the classical master equation in the bulk failed, and the failure is controlled by this boundary action. Yeah.
It's like the Hamiltonian for delta alpha?
It contains the Hamiltonian.
Okay.
Contains the Hamiltonian with a Lagrange multiplier, which fixes it like h equals to 0. Okay, so why do we do this? Why is this important? This is important in view of quantization and axiomatization. I will just talk about quantization. And let's see. So what is quantization in the BV setting? So let's forget about the boundary for a second. The BV formalism gives a framework to perform gauge fixing, having control over this gauge fixing. Okay, so we need a couple of definitions. So a BV operator, BV Laplacian sometimes also called, on a minus one symplectic graded manifold like this, is an operator, a second order operator that squares to zero, and it has this Leibniz-like property and compatibility with omega. Then, if I have this data, the gauge fixing is nothing but integration on Lagrangian submanifolds in this space. Why? Because we have these two theorems that say that if f is delta exact, then the integral on any Lagrangian submanifold is zero. And if f is delta closed, then the integral is invariant under deformations of L. Okay, so what this is saying is that in this setting, gauge fixing is nothing but a class in the cohomology of this delta operator. So, of course, we have to do it for delta closed functions. Sorry, this is a mistake. This is delta closedness. If we take our favorite function e to the ihs to be the function we want to check the delta closedness of, then this is equivalent to the quantum master equation, which is given by this formula. And recall that we have seen this term here in the classical master equation. So if we have the classical master equation, we are starting the procedure that will lead us to a solution of this equation, which in turn will tell us that we can perform gauge fixing in a controlled way.
Because delta LSM is zero, you have the classical, and then it's invariant.
So I want to have delta closed functions of this kind, and then if I take delta of this, yeah, it's equivalent to that. So if I can find SM by expanding over H bar such that this is true, then I know that whenever I take e to the ihs and I integrate over Lagrangian submanifold, this will give me a well-defined gauge fixing. Okay, so this is just a technical remark. So the delta operator doesn't make sense in general for infinite dimensions. So the way we make sense of it is by perturbative expansion, like the usual Feynman expansion. But then the question is, how is gauge fixing when the classical master equation fails? And the prescription that Katanium, Neff, and Reshetykin came up with is as follows. So the idea is that you want to quantize the boundary symplectic manifold in some way. If it's a let me say one sec. So the general assumption is that, okay, so if you want to quantize, you need a polarization in this symplectic space of fields, which is the phase space in the end, such that this is true. And this B is a space of leaves of the polarization. Okay, so this is a technical point, but it's necessary. And the Hilbert space that we associate to the boundary fields is just functions on B, this one. For instance, if we have T star of N, like ordinary symplectic manifold, the polarization that we choose tells us what is P and what is Q. And then the space of leaves of the polarization d over dp will just be n. Then the idea to go in the direction of gauge fixing is to quantize this boundary action S boundary to an operator using the Schrödinger prescription of ordering, usual ordering on the right. And okay, with some assumptions, then the closeness condition we had before translates into this equation here, which then is, as you can see, is controlled by boundary data. So the gauge fixing in the bulk is controlled by the operator coming from the boundary. Yes. So as we had before, remember, without boundary, we had that this state here was a class in the cohomology of the BV Laplacian. Now we have that this state is a class in cohomology of this new operator that has a correction coming from the boundary. Sorry, this is a mistake. This is associated to the bulk. Exactly. So if you change the Lagrangian submanifold on which you're integrating, that represents the gauge fixing, will turn out to be a d hat exact term. And the state itself is a cocycle, so it's D-closed. And then the Hilbert space is just a cohomology of this operator in degree zero. And this is what you would like to have. Let me stress once more that the key information we have here is the compatibility between bulk and boundary. So we are not only resolving the canonical constraints in the BFV sense, but we are doing it starting from bulk data, because what we want to have is this correction. And this correction we only have if we know how to relate the failure of the classical master equation in the bulk with the action on the boundary.
BFV, and what was the old BFV?
The BFV is just you take the constraints and then you, you essentially construct a graded symplectic manifold out of it, and then you quantize that using geometric quantization, for instance.
So it's just about boundary fields without ever asking what happens in the boundary.
Yeah.
It's a kinematical construction.
I guess so, yeah. It's, well, yes. Okay, so so again, let me stress this compatibility, the importance of the compatibility, and then let me go to general relativity. So the natural question is, does general relativity satisfy the axioms that we saw before? If yes, what happens if we use the CMR approach to quantization? So what we did is we tried to test the formalism on different formulations, and we showed that in the Einstein-Hilbert action case, everything goes well. In the Palatini-Holst action case, no. In the Plebansky case, also no. And in the McDowell-Mansouri case, probably yes. So this is still in progress. Oops. But OK, so for today, I will just compare Einstein-Hilbert and Palatini-Holst, because this will give us a lot of information. OK, so what is the setting? We have the usual Einstein-Hilbert action with any Lorentzian metric and the cosmological constant, and the symmetries are infinitesimally given by just all vector fields on the manifold. And since we want to encode them explicitly, we need to know how the diffeomorphisms act on the different fields that we have. And they just act by Lie derivative. So the space we consider, OK, so this is the classical space plus symmetries. This is pseudo-Riemannian metrics of signature D1. And this is just vector fields of degree 1. Remember that the symmetries have to have degree 1. These are ghosts. Okay, so we shift them of degree. And then you take the cotangent bundle here, which means introduce fields G dagger and Xi dagger such that they can pair. And this is the BV extended action for Einstein-Hilbert. And you can compare with that, and you see that this is the same thing. OK, so you can check that this satisfies the classical master equation, which is SM equals 0. Yeah? Well, this is just a very bad notation for pseudo-Riemannian metrics of signature D1. Here we are in D plus one dimension. Sorry, I didn't mention that. Maybe I'll do it. Okay. Right, now we assume that the boundary is not empty. And okay, so to simplify the computations, I must say I had to resort to the ADM decomposition, but only in the neighborhood of the boundary. So we don't assume that the manifold be globally hyperbolic. Okay, so only in the neighborhood of the boundary. And then we have to restrict the space of fields by saying that in the neighborhood of the boundary, so on the boundary, I still have a signature of space-like or time-like kind. Okay. Then you can rewrite the Einstein-Hilbert action in the ADM formalism plus BV extension like this. Okay. Okay, as usual, okay, so this K is just the extrinsic curvature. This is the trace of it. This is the Ricci trace of the Ricci tensor on the boundary. This eta is the G and N term in the decomposition of the metric, and so on. Yeah.
This is the action on the boundary.
No. This is the action in the bulk.
So why is R delta?
Because you can write so the action on the bulk. In this thin neighborhood, you can write it like this. So the Einstein-Hilbert action is equivalent up to the York boundary term using these coordinates. This is the ADM decomposition. And of course, okay, so here to be completely precise, I should say boundary cross an interval. But okay.
This works for both space-like and time-like boundaries,
yes.
And you know what happens at corners?
I don't know why I haven't written the epsilon, but okay, so here there should be an epsilon. There is an epsilon here that says if you are in the space-like or time-like.
No, but my question was...
Corners are not allowed. But we will talk about corners maybe later. Okay, so this is what happens. Then the situation that we have is that in any dimension, which is different from 2, then the data that I just defined gives you this exact BV-BFV structure. Wait, so let me just say, the symplectic form is this one. And I will tell you what the fields are. And this is the boundary action. Wait a sec. So the projection to the space of boundary fields is very explicit, and it's given by these functions of the fields, like rewritings of the field. And okay, so look, this pi m is essentially the extrinsic curvature. It's the extrinsic curvature plus, okay, some combination of it, plus like a long tail, a very long tail, that depends on fields that are not relevant and that will be killed. Yeah, exactly. So I have it here. I didn't have it there. So epsilon tells you if you are space-like or time-like. It's plus one for space-like and minus one for time-like. But OK. Right. So remember, we find this thing for free. We can find it for free. And what it tells us is essentially encoding the symmetry, the algebra of constraints. So the boundary action, you take the variation with respect to the psi field and gives you the usual Hamiltonian constraints in the projected coordinates, of course. And the other part will give you the momenta constraints. Plus, it gives us the residual gauge symmetry on the boundary. So the gauge symmetry tells us that Q, the generator of symmetries on the boundary acting on gamma, is almost what you would expect. So it's almost the action of diffeomorphisms on the boundary, plus something. And as well here, this is almost the action of diffeomorphisms plus something, and here as well. Right, so this makes the constraint algebra not a Lie algebra, but a Lie algebroid, as some people like to call it. It just means that you have structure functions, you have stuff depending on the fields, and it doesn't close like on the nose. Well, no, it does close, but it has this non-constant behavior.
The Q deltas is algorithmical, or you have to solve equations?
It's almost algorithmical. It's pretty much, well, it's very simple actually. The only thing is that since you have like very complicated expressions like this, so essentially what happens is that you will have very long expressions like this that you have to recognize and say, okay, okay, so this object here is just a J tilde. So it's rather pattern recognition, I would say. So you have a very, very long expression, A3 paper, and then you just have to recognize the right things. But there is nothing, no partial differential equations involved, like nothing. It's really linear algebra.
But in the end, isn't it just calculating massive brackets?
Not even. Well, okay, if you have, there are different procedures. The thing is that the central object is this one, then you can either, if you have this one and you have that one, you can compute Q because it's the Hamiltonian function, and the other way around. And there is another way of computing, so this gets a bit complicated, but there are different ways to compute all of this stuff, and all of these methods are very straightforward. They amount to some Hamiltonian functions of vector fields, at most. That's the most complicated thing you have to do. Right, okay, so maybe the only thing which is a bit more complicated is to find this explicit projection, because of course here what you're doing is you have these vector fields in the kernel of the two form, and you have to flow along them to find the actual expression. So you have to solve like very simple first order differential equations. But
can I just get something clear? Can you go one back? Even more back. My confusion is very simple, actually. I just wanted to make clear. Because you have the foliation for the ADM that's also in the bulk, and then you have also the boundary. So you have extrinsic curvatures related to the boundary and to the foliation in the bulk, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just confused about which one is which. So in this equation, for example, you have the extrinsic curvature in the bulk, but you said that the R there is an R-related...
Yeah, but you can always... So in the ADM decomposition, you can write down the covariant derivatives with respect to the gamma metric, the 3 metric that you take on your leaf, right? So this is what you're doing. So formally, okay, as I said, in the neighborhood, this is valid in the neighborhood, which means that the neighborhood is foliated. So around every point in the neighborhood, I can write down this thing using the metric of the leaf in the foliation of the neighborhood. I don't know if this is clear. But anyway, so this is bulk, but it's bulk close to the boundary submanifold. But if you want, you can think of this as You take a globally hyperbolic manifold and then you just do it. I mean, for sure you can do it for that case. So, sorry. Right, as I was saying, so this S tells us everything about the constraints and about the symmetries. The important feature of this is that everything is induced from the bulk. And this gives us the compatibility that we can then transfer to the quantum part. And notice that when we quantize, well, okay, we haven't quantized yet, but when we quantize the boundary action, we essentially get a BV version of the Wheeler-De Witt operator. Because, well, here you have this thing. It's just a Wheeler-De Witt operator. Right, so far, nothing new in a sense, because we are recovering things that we knew from 1978, probably, or even earlier, in a different way. So the question is, can we do it for another formulation of general relativity? And so what we tried to do is to, well, apply the same formalism to the Palatini-Holst tetrad formulation of gravity. So that's the action, just a little bit of definitions. We include the Barberi-Mirzi parameter using this volume form here. So it's anyway here. Notice that the Barberi-Mirzi parameter does induce something on the boundary. So the term that usually is neglected descends to the boundary up to, well, equations of motion. Right, again, the symmetries are given by diffeomorphisms, plus we have this internal gauge because we're taking connections in SO3-1. And we have this general proposition that whenever you have a theory of connections and diffeomorphisms, the way to encode diffeomorphisms in the right way is the following. So you have to take, well, okay, so this is a bit technical, but okay, look at this. So the transformation of the action is given by this formula here. So these are just the normal ghosts that you would consider. And this is the action of diffeomorphisms on A. The ghosts, they change by this term here, which is non-trivial. And for any field that you might consider, this might also be a spinner. Okay, so this could be a section of the spin bundle. Then the diffeomorphism act like this. Or let's say, if you have them act like this, then you will have that this Q operator squares to zero. And in particular, for the case of Palatini and Holst, they also annihilate, so they are actual symmetries of the action. Of course, this is not general because I have to give you all actions one by one, right? So when phi is equal to E, then this is also symmetries of the action. Pardon?
Here, it's two.
I don't know why, but so this is a function. This is a two form. So you have to kill two, right? So this makes sense. Why? It's not clear. But that's the way it works. There is a paper by Piguet that had like a very similar proposal for this action of diffeomorphisms on Palatini. The only thing, so this is a slight improvement in the sense that we work with the global fields. So, so that's the action we consider. It's not very nice, but it's what it is. And the problem we found is that this action does not satisfy the axioms. So what happens is that the pre-boundary 2 form, which is the differential of the Noether form in the BV case, fails to be presymplectic. This means we cannot reduce. And crucially, we have no compatibility between the bulk and the BFV resolutions that you might consider doing by other means. So as it is, with this data, the CMR procedure cannot be performed, adopted. No, the boundary terms are all under control. Notice that any extra boundary term you would like to add would yield just, how do I show it? No. So if you add the boundary term in the action, so something like dn of something, when you do the variation, this will be dn of the variation of this. Okay. You go to the boundary. And so this is an exact term in the one form. So you're shifting your alpha tilde by an exact term. So this does not affect the variation, which is the two form, which is the thing you are interested in. So this is not a problem of boundary terms not being there. The boundary terms you might want to add, they will only generate canonical transformations and will change just the descriptions of fields. Okay, so it's a more fundamental thing.
When you say it's not presymplectic, delta doesn't close.
No, it's closed. Well, okay, our definition of presymplectic means that its kernel doesn't have constant rank in a sense. It's not a subbundle, so you cannot do symplectic reduction. So what you can do, you can...
So where is the rank changing?
Well, I can show you, but so essentially what happens is that you have equations.
It's closed. Your form is closed.
It's closed. It's closed by construction. Okay. But you have equations of this kind, for instance. You would like to solve for x, which is a generator in the kernel. And this is a field of degree 1. So you're not allowed to eliminate this field. And therefore, you have two sectors. One sector where psi is 0, and then this is free.
And psi is what?
Normal deformation? Yes. But there are other situations. Well, OK, it's not only about normal diffeomorphisms, but the kind of singularity you have is of this kind. So it's always the same. So you have. Actually, it's not true, but OK. So you have relations between fields that cannot be inverted. And therefore, it depends on the configuration of the field itself.
But it does happen in a number of series.
Pardon?
It does happen in a number of series as constraints. I mean, is it equivalent to having constraints which are degenerate or not?
I don't think so, no. I mean, not in this sense. I think that, so if you want, the remarkable thing of Einstein-Hilbert is that all of these problems are solved. You also have equations of this kind, but you can solve, like you have another equation for x, the same x, that tells you that this is like something times psi n. And this is exactly what you want. Because then you plug it in, psi n squares to 0, and this is automatically solved. So that's exactly, so this is, well, the technology tells you that sometimes you can solve it and sometimes you cannot. Right. Let me say a couple of words. So of course, you have to interpret this result and maybe come up with a solution to fix it. In any case, it states at the current stage a fundamental difference between Einstein-Hilbert as a BV extended theory and Palatini-Holst.
Could you explain a little bit more where the difference lies between the field is?
So You mean at the level of the failure here?
Yeah.
So I can tell you this thing.
It's the x anxiety. I don't know what x is.
So yeah.
And why?
In some sense, it has to be degenerate matrix.
So the thing is, you have this two form omega tilde, and you would like to find its kernel. So then you take a general vector field x, and you want to compute this thing. And x is something of the form, say, xe d over de plus x omega d over d omega, etc., etc. So in Palatini, there are two problems. One problem is that, so you have the variations of d omega, say, a, I, j, that give you equations for E that are of this form. Let me explain what is happening. So
do you have the problem in a short question? Do you have the problem in E is invertible?
No. Yeah, I mean, sorry. I always assume that E is invertible.
Okay, and you still have the problem.
Actually, if E is not invertible, you can see already from here that everything fails, like from the start. So this big E is a combination of other fields, all odd fields, okay? And here already you have to count. So how many equations like this do you have? You count how many components of this kind you have, right? And you have too many. So you have 18 equations for 12 unknowns. Okay. Yeah, so the equation is for xe, but you have 18 omegas. Right? So what happens is that you have to, so linear algebra, you have to impose relations on these e's. But these e's are odd. So these relations cannot be solved. You cannot check that, you cannot impose other conditions on the fields inside here, because they are all odd.
Is there a way to say what's going on here? So it's about omega.
You're computing solutions to this equation.
I know, but without the equation, there has to be a simple explanation for why something happens.
Isn't it related to the second class constraints of Palatini?
In the end, I think no.
Because this is exactly what the problem, right? That you have too many omegas.
No, because I think, so, I think in this case, we managed to see that the second class constraints in Palatini, if you forget about the BV structure, you don't see them. You are able to describe the same symplectic manifold with the same canonical relations without imposing the second class constraints.
It always has the E available. It doesn't have to reconstruct it from the BV field. No, but
yes.
That's not the problem. Not these second-class constraints. Second-class constraints between omega and E, which is the torsion free condition. Because 3D Palatini is BV extendable.
Yes.
So therefore,
So in 3D Palatini, what happens is that these dimensions match. Right.
So there are no second-class constraints because.
But these are not second-class constraints.
But isn't the process that you can go from Palatini to EDM?
Yeah, but something in the second
person. So the thing is
the vanishing of torsion. So the D. Yeah, no, but then that's this. Mm-hmm. I mean, so EDM works, Palatini doesn't work. So.
Yeah, so the difference between the two.
The second.
Yeah, but the difference between the two. Yeah, but the difference between the two. Well, there are many differences between the two. So the only equivalence between the two is that you're saying that they describe the same critical locus. And from this perspective, that condition is a bit naive, you know? Like, because when you want to give like this full, let's say, BV morphism that sends one BV theory to another BV theory, then you want to have a larger map. You want to send all the space of fields. You don't want just to map the space of solutions into the space of solutions.
There's more. I mean, Palatini action is equivalent to
It's equivalent only when you localize to the half shell, let's say, to the torsion free case.
To the torsion free case.
It's equivalent to
the torsion free case.
Yes.
So maybe you, I don't know if this would be possible.
Which is already solved for the others.
Gauge and fix of the second cascade space.
Okay, maybe there is a way to kind of overcome this problem by looking at the second class constraints. But the thing I want to say is that this whole procedure doesn't need gauge fixing at all, at any stage. So this is just a description of the set of all fields, which is really relevant to describe the canonical constraints. It's the minimal set of data that you need. Whenever you have this failure here, you have to understand what it means. And the thing I can say about the second class constraints is that if you look only at the classical theory, with this procedure, you can describe the fields E and omega such that they are conjugate to one another without solving any second class constraint. And you get exactly the right amount. You get 12 here and 12 here, without time gauge, without anything. So I think that the second class constraints come up when you want to consider the Poisson manifold of fields, and then you want to force it to a symplectic manifold. But here we are doing somehow the opposite thing. We are reducing explicitly, and then you can describe the symplectic space of fields in Palatini without even caring about the second class constraints at this stage. Right, so sorry, let me finish this. Right, so exactly, the question is, should we consider classically equivalent theories to be at all means physically equivalent or not? The point is, in my opinion, is that when you look at quantization, you take into account also what happens outside of the critical locus. So a criterion that only fixes the critical locus is a bit, well, it's not enough. Then the question maybe that you were asking is, what happens if you explicitly put the constraint torsion free? You can do that, but the problem is that the BV structure is even worse. And this raises a question. So to put this constraint here, I need to put a Lagrange multiplier. I just add to the action something of the form T, d omega e. Well, T seems the torsion, let's say lambda. Lambda d omega e. And then the constraint will be the variation with respect to lambda. Well, if I do the BV theory of this and I add it to this picture, I will have something even more singular. So there are a couple of questions that need to be addressed. And also the natural question is, what happens to other theories? Right, so we have analyzed the Plebansky action, Plebansky BF plus corrections. And that has the same problem. A theory that seems not to share the same problem is this McDowell-Mansouri gravity. And this is yet to be performed. But from this BV-BFV perspective, the best theories are, so far, McDowell-Mansouri and Einstein-Hilbert, up to, of course, solution of this problem. But let me stress once again before I finish that this problem, in any case, tells you that the two theories are different. Yes. So in a way, this is kind of refining our knowledge of equivalence between theories. Right. So we can distinguish between classical equivalent theories. The diffeomorphisms, when you include them as explicit gauge transformations, they tell us, by the failure of this, what is allowed in terms of couplings and potentials. like a coupling of the Plebansky type, for instance, is not good. And this should be a first step towards this quantization of gravity in the CMR perspective, but okay, that's still far. Thank you. Yes.
Can you explain what this CMR program is?
Yeah, the CMR program is just the Catalan-Neve-Brescia-Tikhing, where you essentially understand gauge fixing. You associate to the bulk this state, which is the state associated to the bulk, and it's the partition function when you integrate, you gauge fix integrating on the Lagrangian submanifold, okay? And the idea of this, why you do it with the boundary, is that then you can maybe glue, you can understand gluing, and you can understand quantization of a complicated manifold by cutting into pieces, quantizing the pieces, and then gluing back together. And this is, okay, so the scope of this is a little bit more mathematical in the sense that what they would like to do is to extend the Atiyah-Siegel axioms for TQFTs and CFTs and so on to the case of general gauge theories with boundary.
So this is what is new about this proposal. Because here, this is the usual way of writing the
with boundary.
So now, the new thing is that there's data on the boundary, and this data is labeled by what? In your language.
So the data is labeled, so the state is a function on this space of field speed, let's say. So it's controlled by this space of field speed.
What is all grading, or is the field is a specific grading?
Yeah, it could be of all gradings, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and no, I mean, so the thing is that...
And this is a cohomology class. This is
it's a cohomology class of this delta d hat, sorry.
D hat is defined to be
the usual BV Laplacian delta plus this correction d, which is the quantization of the boundary action. So it's...
Why this correction?
This correction comes from the failure, it comes essentially from here. Because you see, so before in the BV case, we have that the first step is the classical master equation. Now it's
not necessary to have the closure.
Yeah. Of course, so one should say that the BV theorems that are, I don't know where.
When you make, sorry, this function term, can you show it again?
This one.
No, the P2
element. The D hat, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So usually it's kind of a bit ambiguous to replace Q or P by H plus Q. Usually the field.
No, I mean, what this is saying is that this is the condition you want for, like, an equivalent of the BV theorems telling you that you can integrate over Lagrangian submanifolds to hold. Right? So this is giving you a condition. If this condition is true, then this state here is a cohomology class of the d hat operator.
Cohomology class, which is independent on the
gauge. Yes. Yeah. So the right. So
how do you glue cohomology class then?
Right. Okay. So the
what
gluing.
Is the measure on the integration?
The gluing. Okay. So this is not done for all possible theories. The idea is that it should be natural and it should be somehow an integration over B. this has been done for the BF theory, abelian BF theory, and what it happens is that the gluing is essentially gluing of torsions.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there is another seminar in 2 minutes. So, let's thank the delegate.